What's going on? Welcome in, beautiful people. How we living on this Wednesday? Happy to be with you until 1 o'clock on 104.5 The Zone. Happy to have your involvement. If you want to do so, 615-737-1045 is how you get in on all the action. 615-737-1045. A lot to talk about. It is officially week three. The Titans will hit the practice field in preparation for the Colts, as you heard from Lucas in his update. We will spend some time on what we have learned about them through 2 weeks and what they have to do, what they have to accomplish against Indianapolis. We're going to spend some time on the AFC South because it's an absolute mess right now with all of the injuries across the board at the most important position, being quarterback. We got the dumbest thing at sports, 11 o'clock. We got Will Compton at 12:20. Stick around. Going to be a lot of fun. But I want to start here with what's happening in the AFC South. I want to start with the injuries that were over the weekend at quarterback. Now, two of these guys one is definitely ruled out for Thursday night football. The Houston Texans put Tyrod Taylor on IR yesterday, and so he will miss at least 3 weeks, and it was reported prior to that he could miss up to a month. Dealing with hamstring injuries, they also placed their rookie wide receiver, Nico Collins, on IR as well. So they're out for at least 3 weeks. It sounds like Davis Mills is going to be the quarterback for the Houston Texans. And I think we all looked at the draft when they took Davis Mills and said, well, that's a bit of a reach there. Davis Mills going, you know, in the same range as somebody like Kyle Trask. There was a run on those, not later round, but mid-round rookie quarterbacks this year, and I thought that was quite interesting. Now, Kyle Trask looked abominable when we were down there in Tampa Bay for the Titans' joint training camp practices with the Bucs, and then in that preseason game, he was probably the worst quarterback on the field that featured Blaine Gabbert and Logan Woodside and Matt Barkley. And not Mike Glennon. Mike Glennon is formerly of the Bucs. Ryan Griffin. Ryan Griffin, who is as forgettable as any individual in all of professional quarterbacking, but has still managed to make a career in Tampa Bay behind both Brady and Gabbert. So then, you know, you kind of drift around the AFC South, and you have the Jacksonville Jags. And we spent some time, you know, our customary Monday tradition, laughing at Urban Meyer after a loss. Urban Meyer looking disheveled and asking if he got outcoached for the first time in his career and being, like, disoriented by the question from the Jacksonville media. You have the visual, and we'll spend some time on this later in the show. You have the visual that I brought to Lucas's attention this morning. You're already laughing.
I was laughing at that for, like, five straight minutes this morning.
It is among its art. It really is. It's a post-game shot, and this comes from it's not even the dumbest thing to come from the Jags social media account this weekend, which I'll have to save until 11 o'clock, so let me not give the whole game away for the dumbest thing in sports off the top of the show. But this picture of Trevor Lawrence and Teddy Two Gloves, Teddy Bridgewater, after the Broncos go into Jacksonville and beat the Jags by 10. There's a picture after the fact of Trevor Lawrence and Teddy, dapping each other up after the game. And in the background is the Jacksonville Jumbotron. Are you okay?
I tweeted it out. So it's on my Twitter account, at Lucas Panzeca.
Oh, look at you with the plug.
It's among the funniest things I've seen in quite some time.
So they're congratulating each other after the game, and in the background is the Jumbotron. But the image that is caught in perpetuity on the Jumbotron in the Jacksonville Stadium at TIAA Bank Stadium, where the press box leaks and I've damn near had a laptop ruined, is the Jags mascot. Just, he looks to be catapulting himself.
Taking a header.
off of the 300 level, right? Like, he looks like he's had it. He looks like he's taking matters into his own hands. He says, you know, I've had enough. I've seen enough. I've lived a good and you know, not a winning life, but I've lived long enough. He just looks to be jettisoning himself.
Ending it all.
Off of the 300 level. Now, of course, I don't, you know, it's some kind of gag that they do with the Jags mascot, and I don't know. It just looks like he's just looks like he's taking his own life. It's one of the best things that I've ever seen. So you have that in the AFC South. And we haven't even talked about the Titans' opponent this week, the hated Indianapolis Colts, who will come to Nashville, where the Titans will honor Bum Phillips and put him in the Ring of Honor this weekend, and where the quarterbacking situation is very much in flux. Carson Wentz, at this point, it's not just one ankle that he seems to have sprained, it's two.
How?
I think it happened. I'm kidding, of course. It didn't happen on the shovel pass, the only shovel pass in the history of professional football that an interception has been thrown. How the hell? I watched that game back on Game Pass last night, like in 33 minutes, the condensed version, and I spent 20 minutes alone rewinding that play and trying to figure out how the hell Carson Wentz threw a pick on a shovel pass.
Optical illusion.
It was... It's I've never seen anything like it in my life. And he clearly has, and there's something to be said about this, right? Like, guys who play this sport for a living have very little regard for their own well-being. Like, you have to accept that going in if you're going to be a professional, if you're going to be a football player in general, I don't care what level, you just have to have some lack of regard for your own health and safety. So Carson Wentz still has that, but he's still trying to make plays that he did in 2017 when all of the things were going right for him. But he's getting the holy hell knocked out of him back there. And I'm starting to think that it's not necessarily because Indianapolis's offensive line looks to be a lesser version than the one that we've seen the past couple of years, right? One of the better ones, if not the best unit in all of football. He's still creating these plays where he himself is causing the pressure. He himself is causing the contact. He is, and he's still trying to get the ball off from weird angles like he's Kyler Murray or Patrick Mahomes. And it's not working for him. So Carson Wentz injures himself, and it's very much in doubt that he will play at Tennessee this weekend. So you look then to Jacob Eason. And really, on their practice squad, and remind me the name of the practice squad quarterback.
Brett Hundley.
Brett Hundley.
Yeah, former Packers backup.
Who's backed up Aaron Rodgers for quite some time and has had precious little success in the absence of Aaron Rodgers when he did have to play.
Former UCLA Bruin.
Yeah, he's not been good, right? So he's on the practice squad. Jacob Eason is the backup as we sit here today, and Sam Ellinger injured himself in, I think it was the last preseason game, so he is unavailable to them right now. And he, during training camp, had shown the staff enough to take snaps away from Jacob Eason, or at least split the reps with the ones when Carson Wentz was dealing with the foot injury. So what do you do with this AFC South other than to expect the Tennessee Titans to roll over them? Now, you can't sleep on anybody in the NFL, right? And I don't have to tell Titans fans what their track record is against Colts backup quarterbacks. You don't always lose, but you do enough to struggle. And it's not like Josh Johnson didn't come into Nashville with a bad Washington football team a couple of years ago and give the Titans all that they could handle in that game too. Like, this is, they're still professional athletes at the end of the day, whether you want to dismiss them. And I have been hugely dismissive of the starter of that team, Carson Wentz, who still appears to be not very good at professional football. He can have moments just like Eli Manning, right? Eli Manning, when he would get on those hot streaks and they would rattle through the playoffs and it would take some luck, it would take a David Tyree helmet catch, but at the end of the day, Eli Manning, for as inconsistent and as frustrating as he was at the quarterback position, still a professional athlete. These guys can still get hot and make plays, right? So how do you approach a week like this where you're not certain, but you're pretty sure that Carson Wentz is not going to be the quarterback that you face? And how do you make sure that the defense does not lull itself into a place, talking about the Titans' defense, how do you make sure that the defense does not lull itself into a place where they see Jacob Eason trotting out onto the field in front of them, and they say, okay, we got this. It's in the bag. You can have confidence, but you can't be cocky because you're still on Sunday against Seattle, gave up three plays for two touchdowns, and 182 combined yards. It was bad what the secondary did. The result was fine because they won. The defense did play better. The pressure is there, so you feel comfortable about that. And we'll talk about Jadeveon Clowney and Bud Dupree later on in the show, because I saw some stats from Pro Football Focus that, I don't know what its intention is to do, and I don't know how much people care about pressures, given that Jadeveon Clowney is allegedly the pressure king, and Bud Dupree's pressure count, according to Pro Football Focus, is not what you would expect for the price point. But we'll spend some time on that later in the show, probably the noon hour before Will Compton joins us. But in the meantime, I want to know how Titans fans are feeling. 615-737-1045. What is your confidence level within the AFC South about your team right now? Because they are flawed. They do have some kinks that they're still trying to work through, them being the Tennessee Titans. They still have some issues that they're trying to address. But more than anything, the Titans are in a great position to be able to handle the AFC South at this point. And I want to know if Titans fans are feeling the same way or if they are approaching this with caution because they know the situation with the backup quarterbacks. We'll spend some more time on the AFC South coming up next, and we'll specifically focus in on the Colts matchup. Your phone calls as well. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. Buck Rising here with you till 1 o'clock. Talking about the AFC South. We were just going through a bunch of the quarterback injuries because Tua Tagovailoa, as Adam Schefter has just reported, he has been ruled out. He fractured his ribs on Sunday. Godspeed, Jacoby Brissett. Excuse me, Ian Rappaport first on it. I just saw the Adam Schefter tweet come across my timeline. So credit where credit is due. But Andy Dalton with a bone bruise in his knee. Justin Fields getting some action. Right now, the only two quarterbacks who are ruled out are Tua at this point and Tyrod Taylor, who, as we talked about, is dealing with hamstring issues and has been placed on IR. But Baker Mayfield got knocked out of his game for a couple of snaps. Derek Carr and Ben Roethlisberger both. That was a vicious game between the Steelers and the Raiders. It was a lot of fun, and they were brutalizing Ben Roethlisberger back there. Apparently, he's got a pec issue. You talk about Carson Wentz, as we did earlier in the show. Quarterbacking right now, and maybe it's just because they're the biggest names that we kind of look at this start of the season, and I try to avoid doing this every season, right, when the rash of injuries pops up in the first couple of weeks, and you're saying, wow, I feel like a lot of guys are getting injured at a higher rate than any other year, and it's probably not the case. You're just looking at the top names in football and specifically the top position in football and seeing the quarterbacks kind of fall away. But I'm actually looking at the Colts Twitter handle right now because they've just tweeted out a stat matchup. Naheem Hines versus the Titans in 2020. 35 touchdowns, 210 yards, or excuse me, 35 touchdowns, 35 touches, I should say. 35 touches, 210 yards, 2 touchdowns. So Indy is tweeting out favorable stats ahead of their game this week to try and, make their fan base feel better about what's happening with their quarterbacking situation. And we'll spend some more time on that here in just a second. But Lucas, you had asked me a question about when the last time the Titans had beat the Colts at Nissan Stadium, and I believe have you looked this up? I don't need the answer yet because I think I know it. I think I know the answer to this question. So Lucas is looking that up right now. But I believe it was Marcus Mariota versus our buddy Jacoby Brissett, who is now the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, much to his chagrin. I believe it was
quarterback for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah. I believe it was a Monday Night Football game in October, and I believe that Marcus Mariota was coming off of injury, and I believe this was the 2018 season when Marcus was still very, very stiff at the time, and he was having to beat the Colts through the air and did so, but it was still a pretty close result, if I recall correctly. Chuck Pagano was still the coach of the Colts at the time. Do I indeed have that correct? Was that the last time the Titans beat the Colts at Nissan Stadium?
No. You're right that it was Monday Night Football, but that was 2017.
Okay.
2018, they lost to the Colts in the last regular season game of the year. It was the win or go home game to call, to get to the playoffs.
Blaine Gabbert.
And that was, it was 2017 Monday Night Football, 36-22, the final. I remember Derrick Henry ripping off a big run in that game.
Yeah, so that was still the Mike Mularkey era. Okay, so a little further back than I remember, but I think the circumstances still the same.
Last time they swept the Colts.
Huh. Are they capable of sweeping the Colts right now? And I listen, I understand the Titans fans are walking around with some BDE this week. They should. Their team went into the most, if not, one of the most, if not the most, hostile environments in the NFL. They were down 14. Seattle choked, and the Titans took advantage. Derrick Henry pummeled them into the ground. Fat Randy makes the kick. Everybody's happy, drunk, naked in the streets, back in Music City, right? But to sweep the Colts is a different topic of conversation entirely. Not because the Colts are better than Seattle right now, because they're not. But this is the boogeyman. This is the franchise that has a quarterback that retired with a perfect record against your franchise. I know Jacob Eason is not Andrew Luck, but I'm still saying that you look at these statistics, you look at this history, you look at the way that the Titans have kind of responded in their games against the Colts. Hell, look at Thursday Night Football last year. And I know special teams had a big part to play in why that game went the way that it did. And the last time that these two teams did play, Derrick Henry just absolutely crushed them, caved their skulls in Indianapolis, but that was without DeForest Buckner and without the player who is now a Tennessee Titan, DeNico Autry, in the middle of that defense. Turns out that makes a difference. But I will say to you that the proposition of sweeping the Colts this year, it's critical. It's critical not only because it's really you and the Colts right now in the AFC South, even as bad as they look, even down 0-2, even as Tyrod Taylor and the Houston Texans look to be a competent NFL football team, he's out for a month, so we'll see how that kind of, if that tail spins. We'll see if the Jags can't find some forward momentum, and I supremely doubt it, but the Jags and forward momentum don't necessarily translate ever in any year under any coaching staff on any quarterback. God help Trevor Lawrence. But to sweep the Colts this year would be so important because those games, and we've talked about this before, those games are done before November 1st. Your last game of the season in your two-game season series against the Indianapolis Colts, that last game is at Indianapolis on Halloween. You are going to have to find a way to handle your greatest rival, not conference rival, not NFL rival, rival period, is the Indianapolis Colts. I know the Titans and the Ravens have some great friction and great history. I know that the Kansas City Chiefs thing has kind of started to bubble up after the Titans beat them in the regular season with Mahomes and then lost to them in the AFC title game. That's a fledgling rivalry, we'll say, as these two teams compete in the AFC. But the Colts, since day one, they're in your division, you see them twice a year, and they've owned you pretty concisely, even as there has been a fairly recent sweep in that series. That history indicates that you don't do well against the Indianapolis Colts, no matter who's playing quarterback on either side, no matter who's coaching on either sideline. It tends to go in the way of Indianapolis. Now, that's one of those things that you can't quantify. And on paper, right? On paper, you're clearly the superior team if you're a Titans fan. But do you feel confident enough in the competency and the history of the Titans to come off a massive win, and then maybe not the next week, and this would be the next week coming off a massive win, but do you trust them to be able to handle themselves in a big spot? Because this is a big spot. It's bigger than Seattle. Even as Seattle was a massive game with massive implications already in the second week of the season, this game's bigger because it counts for more.
You're talking about an opportunity to put them at 0-3.
You'd kill them. You would sink the ship.
Their next two games after Sunday are Miami and Baltimore.
Miami, I don't know what Miami is right now because they were leaning on the strength of their defense, and then Josh Allen goes out and puts
both on the road. They're gearing up for a 3 weeks in a row on the road right now.
Yeah, listen, you could sink the Colts in week three by handling your business at home, where there will be expectations, where there will be, we will see how the fans turn out. The weather is supposed to be beautiful on Sunday, by the way, at Nissan Stadium. Perfect for tailgating. Perfect for the watching of a football game. Perfect for putting perfect for putting Bum Phillips into the Ring of Honor. So I want to know how Titans fans feel about this. 615-737-1045. How do you feel about your odds against the Colts? Does this year have a different air about it between these two teams? Let's start with Bam, who's in Nashville. First call of the day. What you got for me, boss?
Yo, how everybody feeling this morning?
We are fantastic.
Cool. Man, I actually, after Sunday, I kind of feel good about the direction of where we're going, more so because I just felt like I knew from jump with all the new pieces, even though we have veterans, it don't matter how, everybody's individual skills, you still have to come together as a team. So I still feel like I knew the first two games may be kind of rough, but now they're starting to look poised as a team, poised as a as everything that needs to be happening. You know what I'm saying? So I'm actually excited to see. I like to see what where they're coming with everything, man. So Tannehill's starting to, get his movement back. Henry seemed like he opened himself up to kind of get everything back together. The defense was coming together big. Julio's starting to open up. You know what I'm saying? And I don't worry about A.J. Brown because we had this issue with him last year. I think that's kind of like something he goes through to where he drops quite a few at the and then he just goes and goes haywire. So I hope that's something that he breaks. But, yeah, I feel good about going into Sunday. I think, the Titans will probably try to put a little bit of fear in Jacob Eason's heart, but not undercut anything, because we know that they're hungry and we know that they trying to get the 2-1. So, I feel good about it, man, overall.
Appreciate the call, Bam. 615-737-1045 is how you weigh in with your opinion. How do you feel about this upcoming matchup against the Colts? Again, the Titans will take the practice field here in about an hour and a half and begin their week of work. Well, they've already begun their week of work, but begin their practice week of work today at St. Thomas Sports Park. What I'll say about this is Jacob Eason is not good. Jacob Eason is not good at professional football. Hell, he hasn't even played real professional football, but the preseason snaps we've seen of him are atrocious, and the preseason is a lie. So how much worse is Jacob Eason in a real live game situation than he actually looked in the preseason? Now, I look at this and say it makes all the sense in the world why they should be able to handle themselves against the Indianapolis Colts. The offensive line is a little bit worse. The running game is a little bit worse. The quarterbacking situation, I don't think Carson Wentz is very good, but I don't think Jacob Eason's better, so it's a little bit worse. Sandy has tweeted us, it's totally ridiculous to go to the history of the Titans and the Colts. This is now. This is not the team of the past. Hashtag totally confident. Hashtag let the past go. And there is some truth in that, right? But, Sandy, we can't talk about this series. We can't talk about this series without talking about the history.
Can't talk about Tennessee, Florida without talking about how dominant Florida's been in that series.
I think that there is so, because I think on principle, her assessment is correct, right? The analysis changes so drastically from year to year. But even as that has been the case from year to year, this series still kind of has that same vibe that we're talking about. Jared Giles, I'm not sure given how my Tennessee geography B situation went, but I'll go with Giles. Jared Giles on YouTube says, chill, Buck, on the Jacob Eason slander. Hashtag reverse jinx. Okay, but why are you scared? See, because you got Sandy tweeting me, let the past go, and you got Gerald's telling me on YouTube, hey,
damaged.
you're scared of Jacob Eason. You're scared that me saying his name into him, it's like Beetlejuice, Jacob Eason. and then, something happens to the punter for the Titans, like in Thursday Night Football, and the UPS driver who used to punt for Tennessee comes in, gets a punt
Trevor
block.
Daniel, put some respect on the name.
I will not.
Local guy.
Why do I need to put respect on his name? Give me one reason.
I don't know. He's a local guy. He's from Dixon County. He's a great punter at Tennessee. He got put in a tough spot to replace Brett Kern, the best punter in the NFL.
All right. Maybe. But, what? For every Sandy, there's a Gerald. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is why I think it's an interesting conversation. Because you can do away with the history. You can do away with what has happened, given that the way the personnel changes, the way that the coaching staffs have changed. You can look at this differently than any other year, but also understand the importance, because in games when you've needed to close out the Indianapolis Colts in years past, you have been unable to do so. Again, Thursday Night Football was a perfect example of that last year. You were rolling. You were one of the best teams in football. Ended up still being one of the best teams in football, but that point stands that you got to Thursday Night Football. Phillip Rivers gave that defense all that they could handle, and the margin of error for when the Colts broke it open happened to be a block punt. And again, you know, the most respect that I'll put on Trevor Daniels' name is it wasn't on Trevor Daniel that he got the punt blocked. The punt protection in front of him was wretched, and Mike Vrabel and Craig Aukerman talked about it the whole week after, and really weeks before that, because it was, you know, they could tell that something was going to go wrong there eventually. Just happened to be in a big spot on national television against your greatest rival. Alex Ray says, this just in, Andrew Luck coming out of retirement. You wish. Did you see that? You see that picture of Luck the other day? He was speaking of like some like high school history class.
Yeah.
Or something like that. He's wearing cargo shorts. He's got like the dad, he's got the dad Reeboks on. He just looks, I don't know. It's crazy to see that picture and look at that man.
I bet he's the happiest he's ever been.
Oh no, I'm certain. I'm quite certain. And good for him. Not just because Titans fans hated him and he literally owned an 11-0 record against you, but because, you know, it's very hard to do what Andrew Luck did, to remove yourself from that kind of money and that kind of fame and that kind of position and just be good with it. Just be good with it and completely evaporate, except for the rare appearance in a public school classroom setting. 615-737-1045. How confident are you in the Titans being able to handle their business against Indianapolis at home? I would say that from my standpoint, everything tells me that the Titans can do this. But everything also told me in week one that they would look like a substantially better football team. In week one, really, and in week one and a half, because in the first half against the Seahawks, they didn't look that good either. So where does the disconnect lie? The hesitancy for me says, okay, it's still pretty early in the season and they're still working some things out. I think, and Mike Keith, who spoke with us about this, I think Mike Keith came in studio last Monday after the Cardinals' loss and was basically saying, you know, this is going to be a team that we think as an organization is going to ramp things up. They're going to get better as the season goes along, provided health, of course. Now, that's not a given, but it is an understandable assessment. So can they get the pieces that are missing together in 3 weeks? You saw that they cut Bradley McDougal yesterday. One game and he's gone. Get out of here. Again, three plays, 182 yards through the air and two passing touchdowns for Russell Wilson. Bradley McDougal having a big part to play in those coverage busts, in those communication issues. And the Titans recognize that their margin for error is that thin, given that this will be a divisional opponent. But speaking of confidence, let's talk about this college football season coming up next. Because Lucas and I, we spent some time on Alabama and Florida yesterday, the rematch of the SEC championship game, and what it kind of told us about this college football season. The question that I want to ask you, ahead of Tennessee, Florida, ahead of some interesting ranked matchups between Arkansas and A&M, and you have games coming this weekend in the SEC that will be able to tell us a lot more about what the landscape of college football will look like. Do you believe this college football season to be wide open? Because things for me, after that Alabama game, are looking pretty interesting in that regard. We'll talk about it coming up next. Your phone calls are welcome. 615-737-1045. Do you feel that it's not just Alabama anymore? Would you take Alabama as we sit here today on Wednesday the 22nd, or would you take the field? Because it seems like that answer has kind of shifted back to center after a couple of weeks of football. We'll talk about it coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. So we're going to talk about college football here. Lucas has some Paul Feinbaum audio that he wants to play. And he's running through basically the history of Paul Feinbaum to me, as if I'm not aware of who Paul Feinbaum is or what he means to our particular medium. Do you just have his wiki page in front of you?
Well, just putting some background on his relationship with our sister station in Birmingham, which is where this audio comes from, and then I got two in the weeds.
Yeah, I mean we're literally reading off, you know, his place of birth, his age.
He was born in Memphis, got his BA from the University of Tennessee. He's been active since 1978. He married the lovely Linda Hudson in 1990.
Just shut up. Oh, so the reason we're talking about Feinbaum is that Evan White, by the way, says on YouTube, "I love trying to guess what you guys talk about during the breaks. I have no guesses, though." And Gerald says, "Buck is telling Lucas about his thigh care routine." I don't know that we've...
Oh, we got lip readers in the chat.
We do, which is concerning because oftentimes my commercial break, because the sound goes away on Zone TV for the purposes of music rights issues. And, you know, we love the people that make this show free for you, but they don't have any involvement on the Zone TV chat, so no free ads. But, yeah, I would be concerned about that, given that I am on camera and that lip reading can pick up when John Harbaugh is asking Lamar Jackson if he wants to go for it on 4th and 1. So what can they discern from what I'm saying into the microphone and whom I might be saying?
We're going to have to start covering our mouths like they do on
like
the
like a play sheet?
Yeah.
I just start holding up my iPad in front of the camera. During the commercial breaks.
Oh, yeah, you got a DraftKings here.
Yeah. 615-737-1045. How do you feel about the college football landscape right now, Alabama or the field? We asked you this question a couple of weeks ago, right? This is after Alabama just straight up trounced Miami, another top 15 team. This was before we all discovered that Miami appears to be frauds. And against Florida, over the weekend, we spent some time yesterday kind of going through, okay, what made Alabama look mortal? Even if it was just those three quarters for the rest of the year, it may never happen again. Nick Saban may get it out of them after three quarters against Florida, where they just looked a little bit human, just enough for Florida to make that a game and almost send it to overtime outside of a missed extra point and a bad two-point conversion play call. So Paul Feinbaum was asked about this with Cole Kublick and Greg McElroy, who host the morning show down there in Birmingham at WJOX. And this is what Paul Feinbaum, the mouth of the South, had to say about his beloved Alabama.
Well, they're a lot higher than they were 2 weeks ago when I think this team looked unbeatable. They do look beatable now, Cole, and I didn't hear all of what you guys said, so I'll try not to repeat it, but you have to be a little bit concerned. Having said all that, anyone looking at this schedule before the season knew this was going to be one of those two or three dangerous spots. And quite frankly, after starting the game so well, Alabama did everything it could to put itself in a position to lose, which it almost did. Well, I think big picture it's about Alabama, Greg, but as you get deeper into the matchups of the game, you know, Dan Mullen versus Pete Golding is really not a fair fight.
So Dan Mullen, of course, the head coach of the Gators. Pete Golden is the defensive coordinator of Alabama, whose name is being drugged through the streets after the way that Florida certainly handled them up front. I mean, that running game for Florida, it's weird to see Alabama not be able to stop the run.
What was weird was seeing them almost give up a 21-3 lead.
Yeah.
That's when they break you, when they take that lead early in the first half. That's what stuck out the most.
So it ultimately creates greater intrigue about the rest of the college football season, right? Because if Clemson does not look like Clemson. And it's
offensively, they might have the best defense in the country.
The defense is stout, and the defense kept them in that game against Georgia at the start of the season, but the offense isn't there. The offensive line isn't there, and I don't know how much of that is DJ's fault to be able to, you know, to be able to work behind that unit that is clearly struggling. But Clemson, it's not even Clemsoning that's happening right now. They just look to be bad on the offensive side of the football. Ohio State, we've documented their flaws at length on the defensive side of the ball. Georgia, I think, is still very stout and should have the highest expectations of anybody not named Alabama. But outside of that, you know, it's looking like there can be opportunities for, in the right setting, Alabama to be at least knocked a little further off their perch. For example, we spent some time talking about the Ole Miss game. The Ole Miss game, not just for the University of Tennessee, but for Alabama as well. And could Ole Miss, given that Lane Kiffin and Nick Saban, the history of those games that they have against each other, tend to materialize in dramatic fashion. Can this be the year with Ole Miss's offense playing the way that it is and Alabama's defense looking mortal for a second, for three quarters? Again, it's three quarters of one game. And as soon as I speak this into existence, they're going to come out and just run roughshod over the rest of their schedule. But Alabama looking that way creates legitimate intrigue about the rest of the college football season. They're still the best team in the sport.
They still won the game.
They still won the game. We're talking about them as if they'd lost in a win. A win that they needed to have, a win against the team that is going to be one of two teams, really, to push them in the SEC title game between Georgia and Florida as we see the season play out. But Saturday proved that they had some degree of mortality. Florida didn't force a turnover on Alabama, but they did have one of their own, and they were doing it without their stud quarterback, Anthony Richardson. And they were able to find ways to keep Alabama's offense from scoring but one touchdown over the course of that final three quarters.
They kept them off the field.
They bled them to death. Three possessions in the second half of that game. It's unlike anything that I've ever seen. Now, what stood out to me, though, specifically is what happened with the wide receivers at Alabama, because we're used to seeing them get just freakish separation from people, right? Henry Ruggs is making plays down the field for the Las Vegas Raiders now. Jalen Waddle is having a hard time in Miami, but you know the kind of stud that he has been over the course of his career. But I did not see that kind of separation that was allowing Mac Jones to look, I mean, perfect, basically, for an entire season of college football that should have been talked about more if Joe Burrow didn't exist the year before. The Alabama receivers were not creating the kind of separation that we're used to seeing from them. And again, all of this may not matter when they play their next opponent on Saturday. I have to keep saying that because I really do think that they don't look like this but once a year.
Well, it's Southern Miss on Saturday.
Right.
So not going to learn much there. The question is, was that the get-right game for Alabama's defense this early in the season? Because last year, that was the Ole Miss game.
It's possible. It's possible, but Ole Miss should scare them.
Oh, absolutely.
Ole Miss should absolutely scare them. It's not like you can rely completely on seeing what Ole Miss did against Tulane and saying, okay, Alabama's going to have a hell of a time stopping that kind of passing attack. By the way, Lane Kiffin appears to be a bit of a jerk. What is he doing going for it four times on fourth down when they're up?
He's always been like that.
Okay, but 61 points. I think Lane Kiffin was just trying to get to 69.
They could have.
I really do. I really do.
They could have scored 80, 90. But if Pete Golding, Dan Mullen's not a fair fight, what's Lane Kiffin, Pete Golding?
615-737-1045 is how you get involved. Alabama or the field? Did the game against Florida change how you feel about the landscape of college football this year? I don't know if it should outright change your opinion, but does it make you more interested in what may lie ahead? Because I'm fascinated to see what this college football season looks like, given that outside of Alabama, the rest of the usual suspects, Notre Dame, Clemson, even Oklahoma.
They look beatable.
Oklahoma has played close games early this season, and Spencer Rattler, while I do think him to be hugely talented, he does have some flaws at the quarterback position. 615-737-1045. Let's go to Scott and Beth Page, who wants to talk about the Tide. What's up, Scott?
Good morning, men. Man, this is, we've seen this time after time after time after mother bleeping time. Listen, we go back. Y'all remember rat poison?
Yep.
Well, you know what happened before rat poison? It was the time when he got there and scolded them for saying that he was dead, gone, dead, you know. When it was all about the matchups with Hugh Freeze, listen, this guy he's a wordsmith with his recruits. He's a freaking genius when it comes to coaching football. He brings his coaches in. This rehabilitation program, let me tell you what that is. The rehabilitation program is the Nick Saban plan to send these coaches out so he can compete against them because he knows their every single weakness.
It's genius.
There's a reason. Look, if you look at the history of college football and you look at the history of Nick Saban, There is a damn reason why his assistant coaches have not beaten him. It's because he knows their every single weakness. He looks so far in advance of everyone else. He looks at things that coaches have not even thought about looking for. He's still doing it at the ripe old age of 105. He is miles and miles and miles ahead. And that's the only reason why I'm thankful we have Coach Heupel. And other teams have coaches like Malzahn and Dabo Swinney and even freaking Orgeron the Moron down there in in Baton Rouge. You have to have somebody outside of his box. If you get a coach that's inside of his box, you will not beat him. And I would put money on it. Nobody's going to touch him if they coach for him. That's why Mullen has success, because he doesn't know Mullen's every single weakness. Guys, they're going to win the national championship again. Rack me. I'm done.
Oh, do it. Slow on the draw. Were you not ready for it?
I missed. No, it was the accuracy.
You missed the button?
Yeah.
Well, then I'm disappointed that it didn't play like the wrong sound or something like that.
It would have played like the Moses Moody thing from Kendrick Perkins.
Can callers rack themselves?
Oh, I think he just did.
Well, no, I know we allowed him to. Is that a precedent we want to set?
Case by case.
Okay. I'll allow it. 615-737-1045. When we come back, it's time for one of our favorites. Time for the dumbest thing in sports this week. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about. And guess what? It's got a lot to do with the Jacksonville Jaguars, which is everybody's favorite thing to make fun of. We'll do it on the other side. If you want to get involved, you are welcome to do so. What's the dumbest thing in sports this week? You got quite a few things to pick from. We'll get your phone calls coming up next. Lucas and I will tell you what we believe that to be. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.